Hi, this is Morty Lefko with our podcast on emotional eating for this week, and I'm very happy to have as our guest Dr. Andrew Siegel, who is a physician and educator who's going to talk to us about all of the different ways in which a healthy lifestyle can be useful, not only in helping us become responsible eaters, help us people who can't stop eating, might discover some interesting ideas that you haven't had before on how you can do that. He's written at least one book I know of called Promiscuous Eating, Understanding and Ending Our Self-Destructive Relationship with Food. So let's get right on to talk to Dr. Siegel and see if he has some ideas for people who can't stop eating. Maybe you can help us come up with some ideas. Thank you for being here, Andrew.
Hey, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I noticed you're casual tonight. You just came back from your long day at work and you got comfortable. I'm glad you did that. And so let's just have a little conversation. So where do you live and operate from?
I live in Ridgewood, New Jersey, right outside of New York City.
Okay, very good. I'm actually going to be there in a couple of weeks. I used to live in New York, and I now live in San Francisco. I'm going to go back for a week and become a real tourist. So I'm looking forward to getting back there.
Fantastic.
So how did you get interested? You're a doctor, and you say you're a surgeon and educator. How did you go from being a general practitioner and a surgeon to getting involved and interested in the area of emotional eating?
Well, I am actually a urologist.
Okay.
And one of my passions is preventative medicine, preventative health, wellness. And for years, I've recognized the importance of healthy eating, exercise, and other measures that can be taken to avoid the doctor, avoid the hospital. That is really how I got interested in eating and longevity and general health. Now, I recognize that one-third of my patients are overweight, one-third of my patients are obese, and one-third are of a healthy weight, and it's not just my patients. It's a rampant, highly prevalent problem in the United States. And I also recognize, when being introspective, that I am an emotional eater. I am healthy as can be. I exercise daily. I'm a good eater. But I recognize that here I am, a very healthy person who's a practitioner of wellness and preventative health measures. And yet under many circumstances, I find myself eating when not genuinely hungry.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then what's happening to these people who are overweight or obese? And essentially, when you break eating down, I think there are three general reasons why somebody brings food to mouth. One, of course, is genuine hunger. Another one is circumstances that often are beyond our control. You're at work and there's a tray of donuts out. You're at a religious celebration. You're out to dinner with friends, etc. And the third is emotional eating, and I think it's huge. In my own situation, I often find that if I'm extremely stressed, extremely fatigued, I seek solace and comfort through foods,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not genuinely hungry.
Okay.
I found sometimes as well that if I'm put in a situation where I'm not particularly satisfied, happy, or fulfilled, I will come home late at night and seek fulfillment through filling my stomach.
Yep, that's the way it works. Okay.
It's basically, maladaptive. I mean, in my case, I'll compensate for it. I'll exercise. I'm really quite a healthy eater. But I recognize if that's the case with a healthy, fit person, then what's happening with the average person who's not nutritionally conscientious, who's not a daily exerciser? In a world where stresses predominate and get worse every day. So that's really what got me interested in the situation. So what I started doing casually was asking some of my patients, the simple question is, under what circumstances do you eat when you're not genuinely hungry? And I started tallying this information. I wanted to know what they eat, what they ate, what the circumstances were, if the eating satisfied their need for and soothed them afterwards, and what were the ramifications afterwards? Did they feel guilt? Did they feel satisfied, etc.? And I had planned on interviewing about 100 people, and it wasn't just patients. It was its friends and family and anybody I came in contact with, all races, all religions, all ages, all weights, skinny, heavy, obese. And
what were the triggers you found?
I think the largest trigger is stress.
Mm-hmm.
Stress, anxiety, depression, sadness, unhappiness, boredom, huge, fatigue, remarkably consistent. It's mostly, I found that it's mostly negative emotions that drive maladaptive, you know, eating behaviors like this. And interestingly enough, negative emotions tend to be quelled with unhealthy foods.
Yep.
With negative foods. Don't get me wrong, on occasion, happiness and positive emotions drive, reward eating, and I'm going to celebrate with an ice cream, I'm going to treat myself to this. So, you know, any range of emotions can demand eating in some form or another.
Yeah, in my work, I've discovered that there were what I call triggers and rewards, that the triggers are negative feelings like nervousness, boredom, loneliness, depression, stress, etc. The ones you've mentioned, I've actually found about 21 or 22. But in addition to that, you can also be conditioned with rewards, that when you want to celebrate, when you want to give yourself pleasure, when you want to reward yourself, that you can actually be conditioned to want to eat for rewards just as well as you can be conditioned to need to eat to deal with a negative feeling. So I've got pretty much the same experience you do so far. So I'm just sort of tracking along to see if you've got something different than me. And so far we have found the same thing, that there's triggers to deal with negative feelings. And we also are conditioned to eat to attain positive feelings.
No question about it.
Okay, so I'm with you so far. So where did you go from there? So now you got all this information, and you found out what the triggers were. What did you do? What did you do then?
I basically put this information together, and I wrote a book about essentially what drives us to eat when we're not hungry. And listen, although very interested in psychology, a psychology minor in college, I am not a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Not a psychiatrist. I do not do therapy of individual patients. I just have a profound interest in wellness and health, and I think this is an important subcomponent of it. I'm very interested in nutrition, exercise as well, and I'm very, very interested in why we eat when we're not hungry, even on a non-emotional basis, because I think that's a huge problem as well.
Well, do you actually find that? Because I, the one thing you've said so far, it's a minor disagreement, but where you say there are three things that we eat when we're genuinely hungry, when there's emotional eating, and circumstances. Because I have found that people who eat because the food is there at parties, etc., do not do that if there's not an emotional component. That people who are in that third of normal eaters do not eat just because they're at a party and there's food if they're not hungry. Or if there's a big buffet, you know, they'll have a little bit, and then as soon as they're full, they'll stop. Whereas emotional eaters will continue eating. So I don't know that circumstances as such would have a normal eater eating. If there's food around and you're not hungry, if there's not some emotional thing going on, I'm not sure that circumstances as such would have you eat. Maybe, but that's not my experience. People who say that to me, if I look and say, what are you feeling when you eat? There's some belief, there's something there. If I don't eat it now, I won't eat it later. The way to be accepted is to be doing what everybody else is doing. But there's some belief or trigger that's involved when somebody is eating when there's food around. They're just not eating just because there's food. Because many people do not eat just because there's food.
I fully agree with you that if you are an emotional eater and you're put in a situation where you have ready access and exposure to food, that you're going to be the one likely to consume. But by the same token, if I'm sitting there on break at the surgery center and there's a plateful of bagels or donuts out there. I call it temptation eating, opportunistic eating, social eating, habit eating. I mean, I think those are all factors that come into play. Now, I'm not saying I abuse the situation. You know, have a bite or two, but I do think in America there's a lot of eating that goes around by the water cooler in offices. And you might be right, mm-hmm. that underlying that there are emotional reasons for this.
Well, you actually have done a survey of over 100 people. So let me ask you, did people who say that they don't gain weight, that their eating is normally healthy, that they do not consider themselves emotional eaters, who basically had all of the signposts for normal, healthy eating, did those people also eat just because there was food around?
Yes, largely so. And I truly feel that
okay. We
are all, at some level, emotional eaters. We bring our emotions to every situation which we're involved in. And I think that humans literally bring their emotions to the table, and some have much better control than others do. Mm-hmm. But I basically think that on a most primal level, you know, dating back to infancy, there was a time when we were, you know, frightened infants with, you know, bursting with emotions and fears, and we were soothed and sought solace by breastfeeding, by our mother, by oral pacification. And I think what happens is we grow up, we grow older, but deep inside, there is still this sense of oral stimulation as a means of providing relief from anxiety, worries, tension, and pressure that lives on.
That could very well be. That very well may be true for everybody. I've never asked people who don't come to me with an emotional eating problem the kind of survey that you did. So I find people who are obviously emotional eaters, and their emotional eating is part of their circumstantial eating. It'd be interesting for me to start asking my friends who basically say, you know, food is no big deal for them, that they only eat when they're hungry and never eat when they're not hungry. What do you do if you're at a buffet or at a party and there's food around and you're not hungry? Do you just say, I'm not hungry, or do you eat some of it anyway? So it'd be interesting for me to do some research myself and see, is there such a thing as circumstantial eating apart from emotional eating? So that very well may be. I will check that out. So I thank you for raising that.
I'll give you another example, something that I call accessory eating, which in my terms is eating that is linked to activities, almost Pavlovian association. For example, going to the movies and getting popcorn and soda and candy, or just sitting down at night and watching television and turning on the television and having a compelling need to eat something, whether you're hungry or not. Almost a conditioned response. I think that is an entirely common phenomenon. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that in surveying 100 people or so, there are people who are emotional non-eaters as well. Mm-hmm. I fail to mention that. People who deal with stress by avoiding eating.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those who are over-consumers. It's interesting, very interesting, the wide range of how we metabolize our feelings.
Yes. Well, so it sounds like then, so in your practice, you do not then treat emotional eating. You wrote a book about it. And you have some ideas on it, but you actually don't work with people to help them with emotional eating. The only way you're trying to help people is via your book, not with a practice, with your practice.
That is largely true. Although when I see any patient, I really try to, you know, treat them as an integral whole, and I deal with weight issues and eating issues. But on the level that a urologist can. I will send people to nutritionists. I would refer people to psychologists. When I think the condition arises, I do a blog on nutrition and exercise and some aspects of emotional eating. I try to do what I can do. But I, once again, I, I'm not a therapist, and the thrust is the book.
Well, that's fascinating, because everybody that I've interviewed so far has sort of been a private practitioner or an author who still has some sort of course or private practice or working with some institution. So far you're the only person who's actually written a book about it, almost like as a hobby, as an interest, as something you, as a contribution you wanted to make to people because of the extent of the problem, even though it's not something you work on yourself. So we would hopefully see if we can get some people to take a look at your book. The book is called Promiscuous Eating, the subtitle Understanding and Ending Our Self-Destructive Relationship with Food, and it's by Andrew Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-D. And you can get some information about what Andrew's come up with in terms of what did he discover in his interviews with 100 people and from his practice with people where he talks to people about their general well-being, their nutrition, their general health, their exercise, etc., and his blog. So it sounds like this book is going to have a lot of very interesting information, even though Andrew doesn't work with people directly. You only go to see him if you have a problem with urology. Other than that, you're going to have to find somebody else. But it probably is very worthwhile to take a look at the book. I've got a bunch of books on eating, and I can't catch up with all of them, but given what you've said so far, it's real small. It's only 128 pages, so I think I'm going to try to get through it myself and take a look, because it sounds like you've got some real interesting ideas in there.
Thank you, Marty.
Anything else you'd like to say to our audience about what do you consider the solution to be? I mean, as I say, you say you don't work with people yourself, you refer them to therapists and so on, but given what you've identified as the problem, do you have any specific ideas? If you were just giving advice before somebody saw a therapist, what would your basic advice be, your basic solution be to the problem of emotional eating?
Well, I find that a lot of emotional eating tends to be, and also circumstantial eating, tends to be mindless eating. I mean, you lose focus, you're not paying attention, you're in another world. So I always think, you know, first and foremost, making an effort to be mindful is extremely helpful. Trying to understand or asking yourself the question, why am I eating? What am I eating? How am I eating? When am I eating? Are all significant questions. I think the use, if somebody suffers from these issues, I think the use of a pen and paper, a diary, if you will, it can be extremely helpful. Essentially writing down what you eat, why you're eating, and if it's not for genuine hunger, is it satisfying the emotional hunger? What are the ramifications afterwards? If it's stress, is your stress relieved? Are you more stressed afterwards? Which I found that a good majority of people who are stress eaters, for example, end up with a secondary stress based upon the overeating.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The initial stress.
Yeah, people feel guilty when they do not want to eat and say, I'm not going to do it again, and then they end up doing it. You then end up with more negative feelings when you're done as a result of having eaten. Yeah, I see that all the time.
What I'm trying to say is I think being aware, being conscious, being mindful, trying to understand the introspective is first and foremost. I mean, there are a whole host of behavioral tactics and strategies that I think can be employed. Also, I think I have 20 or 25 or 30 in the book. I mean, little things. One thing, for example, I call vaccination and inoculation, which means you're in the office. It's somebody's birthday party, and they have a Carvel ice cream cake, and they carve it into 8 big pieces. Well, you're trying to lose weight, you're overweight, you're stressed, you're tired, you're at work, you want to be social and join everybody. You don't want to look like an antisocial pariah. So vaccination, inoculation is have a little piece, have a vaccination, have an inoculation. So you don't end up with the disease, the obesity disease, things like that. There are a whole host of minor things that can be done if you can't deal with your with the situation fully on a mindful basis, you can at least try to re-engineer your environment in such a way that you are less likely to succumb to mindless eating, emotional eating, etc. You know, other good management protocols are, for example, if you are stressed and you find yourself going to the refrigerator and you must eat, either take what you want but eat less of it, as I just mentioned. Eat something else. Have something healthier. Teach yourself to enjoy eating a piece of fruit. Another possibility is instead of eating to quell emotional hunger, use an alternative activity. Exercise, for one. It releases the same dopamine and opiates in the brain that eating a Cinnabon does, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds as if this is real exciting, that you've got a whole bunch of techniques that might be very useful to a lot of people. So, again, it's Promiscuous Eating by Dr. Andrew Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, and see if we can get some of our listeners and people reading the transcript of this to check it out. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes of your time at the end of a busy day at the office. And I will let you know when this thing is up, but I think a lot of our readers are going to find this real fascinating. Take care, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.